Chapter 20 of Mavia, 5, Queen of the Saracens, and the Ordination, 6, of Moses the Monk. At this time, 7, the Ishmaelites were devastating the country in the neighborhood of the Roman frontier. They were led by Mavia, a princess, who regarded not the sex which nature had given her, and displayed the spirit and courage of a man. After many engagements she made a truce, and, on receiving the light of divine knowledge, begged that to the dignity of high priest of her tribe might be advanced one, Moses by name, who dwelt on the confines of Egypt and Palestine. This request Valens granted, and ordered the holy man to be conveyed to Alexandria, and there, as the most convenient place in the neighborhood, to receive episcopal grace. When he had arrived, and saw Lucius endeavoring to lay hands on him, "God forbid," said he, "that I should be ordained by thine hand. The grace of the Spirit visits us not at thy calling." "Whence," said Lucius, "are you led to conjecture this?" He rejoined, "I am not speaking of conjecture, but of clear knowledge, for thou tightest against the apostolic decrees, and speakest words against them, and for thy blasphemous utterances thy lawless deeds are a match. For what impious man has not on my account mocked the meetings of the church? What excellent man has not been exiled? What barbarous savagery is not thrown into the shade by my daily deeds?" So the brave man said, and the murderer heard him, and desired to slay him, but was afraid of kindling once again the war which had come to an end. Wherefore he ordered other bishops to be produced whom Moses had requested. After receiving the episcopal grace of the right worthy faith, Moses returned to the people who had asked for him, and by his apostolic teaching and miracles led them in the way that leads to truth. 1. These then were the deeds done by Lucius in Alexandria, under the dispensation of the providence of God. Chapter 21. At Constantinople the Arians filled a boat with pious presbyters, and drove her without ballast out to sea, putting some of their own men on another craft with orders to set the presbyters' boat on fire. So, fighting at the same time against both sea and flames, at last they were delivered to the deep, and won the martyr's crown. At Antioch Valens spent a considerable time, and gave complete license to all who, under cover of the Christian name, pagans, Jews, and the rest, preached doctrines contrary to those of the gospel. The slaves of this error even went so far as to perform pagan rites, and thus the deceitful fire which, after Julian, had been quenched by Jovian, was now rekindled by permission of Valens. The rites of Jews, of Dionysus, and of Demeter were now no longer performed in a corner, as they would be in a pious reign, but by revelers running wild in the forum. Valens was afoot to none but them that held the apostolic doctrine. First he drove them from their churches, the illustrious Jovian having given them also the new-built church. And when they assembled close up to the mountain cliff, to honor their master in hymns, and enjoy the word of God, putting up with all the assaults of the weather, now of rain, now of snow, and cold, and now of violent heat, they were not even suffered this poor protection, and troops were sent to scatter them far and wide. Chapter 22. How Flavianus and Diodorus gathered the Church of the Orthodox in Antioch. Now Flavianus and Diodorus, like breakwaters, broke the force of the advancing waves. Meletius, their shepherd, had been constrained to sojourn far away. But these looked after the flock, opposing their own courage and cunning to the wolves, and bestowing due care upon the sheep. Now that they were driven away from under the cliff, they fed their flocks by the banks of the neighboring river. They could not brook, like the captives at Babylon, to hang their harps upon the willows, 1, but they continued to hymn their maker and benefactor in all places of his dominion, 2, but not even in this spot was the meeting of the pious pastors of them that blessed the Lord suffered by the folk to be assembled. So again this pair of excellent shepherds gathered their sheep in the soldiers' training ground, trod there, tried to show them their spiritual food in secret. Diodorus, in his wisdom and courage, like a clear and mighty river, watered his own, and drowned the blasphemies of his opponents, thinking nothing of the splendor of his birth, and gladly undergoing the sufferings of the faith. The excellent Flavianus, who was also of the highest rank, thought piety the only nobility, 3, and, like some trainer for the games, anointed the great Diodorus, for, as though he had been an athlete for five contests, five. At that time he did riot himself preach at the services of the church, but furnished an abundant supply of arguments and scriptural thoughts to preachers, who were thus able to aim their shafts at the blasphemy of Arius, while he as it were handed them the arrows of his intelligence from a quiver. Discoursing alike at home and abroad, he easily rent asunder the heretics' nets, and showed their defences to be mere spiders' webs. He was aided in these contests by that Aphrius, whose life I have written in my religious history, 8, and who, preferring the welfare of the sheep to his own rest, abandoned his cell of discipline and retirement, and undertook the hard toil of a shepherd. Having written on these matters in another work, I deem it now superfluous to recount the wealth of virtue which he amassed, but one specimen of his good deeds I will proceed now to relate, especially appropriate to this history. Chapter 23, of the Holy Monk Aphrius. On the north of the river Orontes lies the palace. On the south a vast two-storied portico is built on the city wall, with lofty towers on either side. Between the palace and the river lies a public way open to passengers from the town, through the gate in this quarter, and leading to the country in the suburbs. The godly Aphrius was once passing along this thoroughfare on his way to the soldiers' training ground, in order to perform the duty of serving his flock. The emperor happened to be looking down from a gallery in the palace, and saw him going by wearing a cloak of undressed goat's skin, 1, and walking rapidly, though of advanced age. On its being remarked that this was Aphrius, to whom all the town was then attached, the emperor cried out, "Where are you going? Tell us readily and cleverly," he answered, "to pray for your empire." "You had better stop at home," said the emperor, "and pray alone like a monk." "Yes," said the divine man, "so I was bound to do, and so I always did till now, as long as the Savior's sheep were at peace. But now that they are grievously disturbed, and in great peril of being caught by beasts, I needs must leave no means untried to save the nurslings. For tell me, sir, had I been a girl sitting in my chamber, and looking after the house, and I had seen a flash of flame fall, and my father's house on fire, what ought I to do? Tell me, sit within and never mind the house being on fire, and wait for the flame to approach. Or bid my bower goodbye, and run a pan down and get water, and try to quench the flame. Of course you will say the latter, for so a quick and spirited girl would do. And that is what I am doing now, sir. You have set fire to our father's house, and we are running about in the endeavor to put it out." So said Aphrius, and the emperor threatened him and said no more. One of the grooms of the imperial bedchamber, who threatened the godly man somewhat more violently, met with the following fate. He was entrusted with the charge of the bath, and immediately after this conversation he came down to get it ready for the emperor. On entering he lost his wits, stepped into the boiling water, before it was mixed with the cold, and so met his end. The emperor sat waiting for him to announce that the bath was ready for him to enter, and after a considerable time had gone by he sent other officers to report the cause of the delay. After they had gone in and looked all about the room, they discovered the chamberlain slain by the heat, and lying dead in the boiling water. On this becoming known to the emperor, they perceived the force of the prayers of Aphrius. Nevertheless they did not depart from the impious doctrines, but hardened their heart, like Pharaoh, and the infatuated emperor, though made aware of the miracle of the holy man, persisted in his mad rage against piety. Chapter 24, of the Holy Monk Julianus. At this time to the celebrated Julianus, whom I have already mentioned, was forced to leave the desert, and come to Antioch, for when the foster children of lies, the facile framers of calumny, I mean of course the Arians, were maintaining that this great man was of their faction, those lights of the truth, Flavianus, Diodorus, and Aphrius sent Acacius, 1, an athlete of virtue, who afterwards very wisely ruled the church at Berea, to the famous Julianus, 2, with the entreaty that he would take pity on so many thousands of men, and at the same time convict the enemy of lies, and confirm the proclamation of the truth. The miracles worked by Julianus, on his way to and from Antioch, and in that vast city itself are described in my religious history, which is easily accessible to all who wish to become acquainted with them. But I am sure that no one who has inquired into human nature will doubt that he attracted all the population of the city to our assembly, for the extraordinary is generally sure to draw all men after it. The fact of his having wrought great marvels is attested even by the enemies of the truth. Before this time in the reign of Constantius the Great, Antonius III had acted in the same way in Alexandria, for he abandoned the desert and went up and down that city, telling all men that Athanasius was the preacher of the true doctrine, and that the Arian faction were enemies of the truth. So those godly men knew how to adapt themselves to each particular opportunity, when to remain inactive and at rest, and when to leave the deserts for towns. Chapter 25 Of what other monks were distinguished at this period. There were also other than at this period, who emitted the bright rays of the philosophy of solitary life. In the Chalcidian, 1. Desert Avitus, Morcianus, 2, and Abrams, 3, and more besides whom I cannot easily enumerate, strove in their bodies of sense to live a life superior to sense. In the district of Opimea, 4, Agapetus, 5, Simeon, 6, Paulus and others reaped the fruits of the highest wisdom. In the district of the Zeugmatenses, 7, were Publius, 8, and Paulus. In the Seresteian, 9, the famous Asipsemus had been shut up in a cell for 60 years, without being either seen nor spoken to. The admirable Zoimatus, though bereft of sight, used to go about confirming the sheep and fighting with the wolves, so they burned his cell, but the right faithful general Trajanus got another built for him, and paid him besides other attentions. In the neighborhood of Antioch, Marianus, 10, Eusebius, 11, Ammianus, 12, Palladius, 13, Simeon, 14, Abrams, 15, and others, preserved the divine image unimpaired, but of all these the lives have been recorded by us. But the mountain which is in the neighborhood of the great city was decked like a meadow, for in it shone Petrus, the Galatian, his namesake the Egyptian, Romanus Severus, 1, Zeno, 2, Moses, and Malchus, 3, and many others of whom the world is ignorant, but who are known to God. Chapter 26 Of Didymus of Alexandria and Ephrem the Syrian. At that period at Edessa flourished the admirable Ephrem, and at Alexandria Didymus, 4, both writers against the doctrines that are at variance with the truth. Ephrem, employing the Syrian language, shed beams of spiritual grace, totally untainted as he was by heathen education. 5, he was able to expose the niceties of heathen error, and lay bare the weakness of all heretical artifices. Harmonius, 6, the son of Bardsines, 7, had once composed certain songs, and by mixing sweetness of melody with his impiety beguiled the hearers, and led them to their destruction. Ephrem adopted the music of the songs, but set them to piety, and so gave the hearers at once great delight, and a healing medicine. These songs are still used to enliven the festivals of our victorious martyrs. Didymus, however, who from a child had been deprived of the sense of sight, had been educated in poetry, rhetoric, arithmetic, geometry, astronomy, the logic of Aristotle, and the eloquence of Plato. Instruction in all these subjects he received by the sense of hearing alone, not indeed as conveying the truth, but as likely to be weapons for the truth against falsehood. Of holy scriptures he learnt not only the sonnet, but the sense. So among livers of ascetic lives and students of virtue, these men at that time were conspicuous. Chapter 27 Of what bishops were at this time distinguished in Asia and Pontus. Among the bishops were the two Gregory, the one of Nazianzus, 1, and the other of Nyssa, 2, the latter the brother, and the former the friend and fellow worker of the great Basilius. These were foremost champions of piety in Cappadocia, and in front rank with them was Peter, born of the same parents with Basilius and Gregorius, who though not having received like them a foreign education, like them lived a life of brilliant distinction. In Pisidia Optimus, 3, in Lycaonia Amphilochius, 4, fought in the front rank on behalf of their father's faith, and repelled him enemies' assaults. in the West, Damasus, 5, Bishop of Rome, and Ambrosius, entrusted with the government of Milan, smote those who attacked them from afar. In conjunction with these, bishops forced to dwell in remote regions, confirmed their friends, and undid their foes by writings. As pilots able to cope with the greatness of the storm were granted by the governor of the universe. Against the violence of the foe he set in battle array the virtue of his captains, and provided means meet to ward off the troubles of these difficult times. And not only were the churches granted this kind of protection by their loving Lord, but deemed worthy of yet another kind of guidance. Chapter 28 of the letter written by Valens to the great Valentinianus about the war, and how he replied. The Lord roused the Goths to war, and drew on to the Bosphorus him who knew only how to fight against the pious. Then for the first time the vain Dan became aware of his own weakness, and sent to his brother to ask for troops. But Valentinian replied that it were impious to help one fighting against God, and right rather to check his rashness. By this the unhappy man was filled with yet greater infatuation, yet he did not withdraw from his rash undertaking, and persisted in ranging himself against the truth. 1. Chapter 29 of the Piety of Count Derentius. Derentius, an excellent general, distinguished for his piety, had set up trophies of victory, and returned from Armenia. On being ordered by Valens to choose a boon, he mentioned one which it was becoming in a man nurtured in piety to choose, for he asked not gold, nor yet silver, not land, not dignity, not a house, but that one church might be granted to them, that were risking their all for the apostolic doctrine. Valens received the petition, but on becoming acquainted with its contents he tore it up in a rage, and bade Derentius beg some other boon. The count, however, picked up the pieces of his petition, and said, I have my reward, sir, and I will not ask another. The judge of all things is judge of my intention. Chapter 30 of the bold utterance of Trajanus the general. After Valens had crossed the Bosphorus, and come into Thrace, he first spent a considerable time at Constantinople, in alarm as to the issue of the war. He had sent Trajanus in command of troops against the barbarians. When the general came back beaten, the emperor reviled him sadly, and charged him with infirmity and cowardice. Boldly, as became a brave man, Trajanus replied, I have not been beaten, sir, it is thou who hast abandoned the victory by fighting against God, and transferring his support to the barbarians. Attacked by the he is taking their side, for victory is on God's side, and comes to them whom God lets. Dost thou not know, he went on, whom thou hast expelled from their churches, and to whose government these churches have been delivered by thee? Arinka and Victor, generals, like Trajanus, confirmed the truth of what he said, and implored the emperor not to be angered by reproaches which were founded upon fact. 3. Chapter 31 of Isaac. 1. The monk of Constantinople and Britannio the Scythian bishop. It is related that Isaac, who lived as a solitary at Constantinople, when he saw Valens marching out with his troops, cried aloud, Whither goest thou, O emperor? To fight against God, instead of having him as thy ally. 'Tis God himself who has roused the barbarians against thee, because thou hast stirred many tongues to blasphemy against him, and hast driven his worshippers from their sacred abodes. Cease then thy campaigning and stop the war. Give back to the flocks their excellent shepherds, and thou shalt win victory without trouble, but if thou fightest without so doing thou shalt learn by experience how hard it is to kick against the pricks. 2. Thou shalt never come back, and shalt destroy thy army. Then in a passion the emperor rejoined, I shall come back, and I will kill thee, and so exact punishment for thy lying prophecy. But Isaac, undismayed by the threat, exclaimed, If what I say be proved false, kill me. Britannio, a man distinguished by various virtues, and entrusted with the episcopal government of all the cities of Scythia, fired his soul with enthusiasm, and protested against the corruption of doctrines, and the emperor's lawless attacks upon the saints, crying in the words of the godly David, I spoke of thy testimonies also before kings, and was not ashamed. 3. Chapter 32 of the expedition of Valens against the Garbs, and how he paid the penalty of his impiety. Valens, however, spurned these excellent counselors, and sent out his troops to join battle, while he himself sat waiting in a hamlet for the victory. His troops could not stand against the barbarians' charge, turned tail, and were slain one after another as they fled, the Romans fleeing at full speed, and the barbarians chasing them with all their might. When Valens heard of the defeat, he strove to conceal himself in the village where he lay, but when the barbarians came up, they set the place on fire, and together with it burnt the enemy of piety. Thus in this present life Valens paid the penalty of his errors. 1. Chapter 33. How the Goths became tainted by the Arian error. To those ignorant of the circumstances, it may be worthwhile to explain how the Goths got the Arian plague. After they had crossed the Danube and made peace with Valens, the infamous Eudoxius, who was on the spot, suggested to the emperor to persuade the Goths to accept communion with him. They had indeed long since received the rays of divine knowledge, and had been nurtured in the apostolic doctrines. But now, said Eudoxius, community of opinion will make the peace all the firmer. Valens approved of this counsel, and proposed to the Gothic chieftains an agreement in doctrine, but they replied that they would not consent to forsake the teaching of their fathers. At the period in question, their bishop Eulphilus was implicitly obeyed by them, and they received his words as laws which none might break, partly by the fascination of his eloquence, and partly by the bribes with which he baited his proposals. Eudoxius succeeded in inducing him to persuade the barbarians to embrace communion with the emperor, so Eulphilus won them over on the plea that the quarrel between the different parties was really one of personal rivalry, and involved no difference in doctrine. The result is that up to this day the Goths assert that the Father is greater than the Son, but they refuse to describe the Son as a creature. Although they are in communion with those who do so, yet they cannot be said to have altogether abandoned their father's teaching, since Eulphilus, in his efforts to persuade them to join in communion with Eudoxius and Valens, denied that there was any difference in doctrine, and that the difference had arisen from mere empty strife. 1.